Welcome to this Musicians of Rochester podcast for Classical 91.5. I'm Julia Figueres. You've seen him on both sides of the podium for your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, most often in the trumpet section. You've seen him at jazz clubs. You may have even seen him playing the didgeridoo. Today, we get up close and personal with trumpeter Herb Smith. Greetings.
Hello, how are you?
So Herb, welcome to this podcast. You have been very busy. You were on with us for Backstage Pass some months back for the Gateways Brass Collective. And I understand you missed the Holiday Pops because you had a great gig with them.
Yeah, I missed the Holiday Pops. But this is the first time I've missed the Holiday Pops in a few years, many years actually. And it was bittersweet. However, the group did play in Chicago at the Midwest Band Clinic. And it was just fantastic. It was really, really good. It's a huge, huge conference. Band directors from all over the country, all over the world. Many performances, and our group was able to perform. It was really good.
Yeah, I saw the photographs on Facebook. You were rubbing your elbows with some pretty famous folk.
It was good. It was a lot of fun.
So you were a trumpeter. How did you stumble upon that bright, shiny instrument?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, that's the story. Is fourth grade, and the band director plays all the instruments. It was the meeting where you get to decide if you want to play an instrument or not. And the band director played all the instruments. It was me and my dad. We went there. And just looking at the instruments, I'm kind of sizing them up, kind of, you know, a 9-year-old kid. And, you know, the tuba, that's too big. You know, flute, that's too small. You know, trombone, that looks kind of weird. Trumpet, you know, seems shiny. Sound is okay, not too big, you know. Let's just go with it. It was just kind of a thing, you know, just picked it out of the blue and immediately had a talent for it. You know, my band director was saying, wow, yeah, you're really good already. No, it was just kind of a thing. And from fourth grade until now, I'm still playing it.
So when you were in fourth grade and you get your trumpet for the first time, did you have any, as you started to play, any mentors that you were listening to on the old shiny vinyl?
Most definitely. I would say my number one mentor that I was listening to, it was two. It was Miles Davis and Wynton Marsalis. Like, those were my main ones that I would emulate, because Miles Davis, specifically the album Kind of Blue, is just a classic. Like, it still sells today. Like, it's a classic album. And Wynton Marsalis, being a younger player, young African-American player, and I got to meet him when I was in high school. And I followed his career, you know, and that was really what helped propel me.
So when you met him, did Wynton have a solid piece of advice for you, something that stuck with you?
Shed. Practice. No, I was in high school. And Wynton came to Cincinnati, Ohio, and played. And I went to the first set, and we went backstage. And my dad was with me. And I didn't have my trumpet with me. And we went backstage, talked to Wynton. Wynton was like, you got your horn with you? And I was like, no. So he gave me his horn, and I played a little bit of his horn. This is a high school, you know, it's a high school junior.
And he doesn't do that a lot.
No, he doesn't. And then he was like, go home, get your horn, and come back. So I went home. My dad drove me home. We were like, zipping. Come back. And I ended up playing some etudes and some solos for Wynton. And he was just saying how, you know, impressed I was. I remember him saying, and he wouldn't remember this, but I remember him saying, man, your body just resonates well. You know, he was like, some people, when they play, they have to kind of create a sound. But he says, your body just resonates well. And, you know, I just took that to heart. And that's one of the things that I feel is one of my strong points on playing the trumpet, is just my trumpet sound.
In fact, you can't even create that. You were just born with that, so that makes you lucky.
Oh, no, it was right. You know, just kind of the stars were aligned, you know, the angels dropped the trumpet into my hand, and that's what it was.
You grew up in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a town that has a lot of great music, which must have been very helpful to you.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, Cincinnati Symphony. I was in the Cincinnati Youth Symphony. I took lessons at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. I went to the School for Creative and Performing Arts, right? There's just so many musical avenues there, which really helped me to propel myself and really set me up for coming here to Rochester, to Eastman, because I was steeped in both jazz and classical. I was in the jazz band at band in school, but I was also in the youth symphony, and we would do our joint concerts, you know, with the youth symphony, with the Cincinnati Symphony. And you get to sit there next to, you know, the principal trumpet of the Cincinnati Symphony. And it's just, it's so inspiring.
You know, we have this, as you know, the same setup here in Rochester,
right,
with the RPO and the Rochester Philharmonic Youth Orchestra and the side-by-side,
right,
and the mentoring. Have you gotten to work with the RPYO kids?
I have very much, yeah. No, it's such a great thing because, you know, I teach anyone trumpet. You know, if someone wants to take trumpet lessons, they don't have to be a top-notch student, you know, for me to teach them. They just kind of have to have a love for it, you know. But when you're dealing with the kids in the youth symphony, these kids are already, you know, it's like preaching to the choir, you know, like they're already in. And so you can really get into the intricacies of music and the horn. And so, no, it's really just really great, really rewarding to work with those kids.
Now, the Eastman School of Music didn't have a jazz program for the longest time.
I know, it's crazy.
Was it set up and running when you got there?
It was.
It was.
Yeah, I actually was in the last big band that Ray Wright conducted. Really an honor to just be in the same, in the presence of him. His ears were just unbelievable. I have a good story about that too. But
well, share it.
So I was a freshman at Eastman, and one of the players in the Eastman Jazz Ensemble that Ray Wright was conducting had to do something. He couldn't be at rehearsal, so he wanted to get a sub for the rehearsal. So he asked me to sub, and I am just like blown away. Oh my God, I'm a freshman and I'm gonna go and sub in the Eastman Jazz Ensemble with Ray Wright. So I get in there, I'm playing fourth trumpet, and we're doing this loud thing. I mean, it was just really loud or whatever, and I'm playing, and Ray Wright just stopped the whole band. And he says, "Fourth trumpet, you're not playing loud enough. You're not balancing the section." And I'm just like shocked, you know, kind of, you know, I'm nervous, I'm shocked, and I'm also amazed that he could hear that, you know, that he could hear out of the entire band me, you know. So he just had really, really good ears, really good ears. And it was just a pleasure to be. And actually, when I was later, I think I was like a sophomore at Eastman, that was when I was in the last band that he directed.
What did the Eastman School of Music give you?
That's a good question, actually. Well, one of the things that Eastman School gave me was a good view into the level of play needed for a professional level. It gave me a good view into what I needed to do in order to be at the level that works for a professional. The orchestras were at the level, the jazz bands, the concert bands, the teachers. So when I left Eastman, I went right into RPO because I was at that level. That's really one of the things that it did. My teacher, Barbara Butler, and then people like Don Hunsberger, you know, Ray Wright, you know, just so many teachers that I had there were just, you know, Bill Dobbins, just were really, really striving to have the school at the same level as the professional. So when you go out into the world, you're ready. That's what it did for me.
It's an obvious question, but maybe not so obvious. There aren't a lot of African Americans in the world of classical music, and yet here you are.
Yep.
Has that ever felt awkward or otherworldly to you?
It's a really interesting thing because there are many times when I'm playing a concert at RPO and I'm the only African American on stage, but I'm probably one of the only African Americans in the room at Eastman Theater. So, you know, for me, there is a little bit of wanting to represent, you know, wanting to kind of show forth, wanting to be a good citizen, if you will, or whatever, and just, you know, have that excellence. You know, it's like it's beyond just color of skin, ethnicity. It's about Herb is here because of the excellence of play. You know, there's that. And then there's the other side of that where when African-American kids or someone does come in, you know, then it's like for them to see me on stage, wow, okay, you know, there's an African-American up there. Like maybe that's something I could do. Maybe that's an avenue that I can go down, you know. So for me, it's a really different thing. And I go through, just depending on where I am, I'm in different places about that, you know. But being in Rochester and being in a Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra and being the only African-American, I've never really felt, you know, discriminated against or isolated or anything. I mean, everything as far as the orchestra and the musicians and the patrons just really welcomed me, and that's been really great.
See, you're also deeply involved with the Gateways Music Festival.
Exactly.
Where everybody in the orchestra does, in fact, look like you.
Exactly.
So how old were you? When did that start for you?
Okay, so I was out of Eastman. For me, I think I was maybe in Rochester Philharmonic a few years, so probably around mid-90s or so, 1995 is when I first got into the Gateways Orchestra. And that was when Arminta Hummings was directing it, and besides being an all-African-American orchestra, we would wear the African garb. Also, that was one of her things. And it really was an eye-opener for me to be on stage like that. It was just like, wow, like I have never experienced this before, you know. And it really is an eye-opener to the audience to see that, because it really is something that just doesn't exist. An orchestra, full orchestra, playing classical music of all African-American players.
So how do we get do something in between the only African-American on stage and a completely African-American orchestra? How in the world do we, Herb, find a way? I know this is like, no one's going to solve the world in a 20-minute
right.
podcast,
exactly.
But how do we get the orchestra and the audience to be more like America?
When I was in Japan touring with the Eastman Wind Ensemble as a, I don't know, college senior, we would go and play concerts. Like we played Suntory Hall. We played these big concert halls in Tokyo. And the crowds were just full, jam-packed. It was unbelievable. Now, this is a few years ago. I don't know if it's like that now. But we would come out and we were rock stars. there were all these kids. They wanted our autographs and all this stuff. It was amazing. What was going on at that time was every kid played an instrument. Every single kid between the ages of like fourth and sixth grade or whatever played an instrument. And so, you know, everyone has to learn how to read. Everyone has to learn how to count, you know, math, all these social studies. So their thing was everyone should learn how to play an instrument. And what that does is it casts a net that is going to catch people. Some of those people are going to just say, after their time is up, I'm done, you know. And some of those people are going to say, I'm going to stick with music. Same way like with language. Like when you go to school, you have to take language for 2 years. And some people will just go ahead and keep taking it and then become, you know, a linguist or something like that, you know. So in America, music, and especially in city schools, music is not even optional. In some places, music is not even an option. Not even an option.
There are places where their music program is all after school.
Yeah, right. And so if city schools made everyone play an instrument for just a couple years, then you would catch some of the kids that are going to love it and some of the kids that aren't, which would then start feeding the... Because most of the African-American kids that you would see in the city of Rochester, where do they go to school? City schools. And then you would start having bands. You'd start having more people in bands. And then you'd start having more students go to college. And then those students would start getting jobs. I mean, it's like a long, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. But I really do feel that's the way, that's the only way that we're going to get more diversity in orchestras, is because it doesn't start late. It starts early. If I hadn't started playing trumpet in fourth grade, I wouldn't be here now. You know, and you really can't start an instrument in eighth grade and be at the level of, now I'm not saying it's not possible. You know, it's definitely possible, but there's some kind of study that you have to have played an instrument for so many years before you become a certain age for your brain to actually, and I don't know what that study is, but I really think that's the answer. It's a really more of an answer of like, it just, we need to have more music programs in city schools, in schools where the African American kids would be.
So your dad, did your daughter play an instrument?
She did. She actually used to play violin. She doesn't play violin anymore, but she, you know, we cast that net to her. She played. She had a chance. She played it. It wasn't for her. And then, you know, she moves on to something else. And that's kind of what it is. Some people are going to love it. Some people aren't.
And yet the music still, even when you're raised like that, I played the trumpet. And then they gave me a French horn. And that was pretty much the end of my instrumental career. And I think you understand why. But
I love French horn. I love French horn. But I'm telling you. And French horns, if you're hearing me, you know, I mean, French horn is a very tough instrument.
Really tough.
I'm happy I'm playing trumpet. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
But French horn, when it's played well, oh my God, make you weep.
Such a beautiful instrument.
Beautiful tone.
It stressed me out beyond belief. It wasn't worth the stress. But that music stayed with me. That music stayed in my soul.
Right. And then you're a music lover because you had that.
Right.
And that's part of it too. You know, you teach the kids that early on and it sticks.
So when you're teaching your kids, because you said you'll teach anybody. So when you're teaching, Herb, what do you bring to the table that you feel are the most important lessons that your students of any age need to carry inside them?
For me, music is about love and it's about fun. That's the bottom line. That's really what it is. If you're not liking it, then there's really no reason to do it. It's for me, for music. Because music is tough. I mean, it's tough, you know, it's like a whole lot of hours. You know, like if you think about you're going to play a concert that's an hour, but in order to play that concert for an hour, there's got to be 3, 4, 5 hours of practice for that, you know, in order to be at the level for that concert. So you got to love it. You got to love it. And so when my students come in, it's like, I hope that they can catch that love from me, that just that fun, you know, let's just have fun. Let's play. You know, it's like I tell people I play for a living. You know, I don't work for a living. I play for a living, you know, and that's really to me like the underlying thing. Now, of course, you got to work. You got to practice. You got to do your scales. You got to, you know, but if you're not having fun with it, then it's really tough to excel.
A banner year for you this year, because not only has the Gateways Brass Collective done really, really well, done a lot of touring, got a lot of great publicity, but you got to pick up a baton and,
yes,
and conduct the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. Not even the youth orchestra. I mean, you were up in front of the big kids.
Yeah.
How was that?
That was out of this world. That was out of this world. That was an honor that will never be forgotten. I mean, you know, you can put my name up there next to Zinman, Zuckerman, Seaman, Rimmerite, you know, all of these men that conducted the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, and I have conducted that orchestra to such a long history that the orchestra has. Such a great, you know, history of excellence that this orchestra has. And I got to stand up there and wave my little hand. I mean, that is unbelievable to me. So it's just been such an honor.
Will you get another such honor, another call to the podium?
I will, actually. I have some gigs coming up where I'll be conducting some kids concerts in March, and it's going to be a concert about voting, and we're going to be doing this whole thing where the kids will get to vote on which instrument they want to hear more of, and we're going to have like a little debate between the two instruments and like why they should listen to this one. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, watch out for the trumpet section. They're always trouble. They may be stuffing the ballot box while you're not in. I'm just saying.
For sure, for sure.
So before we wrap this up, I would love to know, Herb, what feeds your soul?
What feeds my soul? Wow, that's really good. I am out in the public and I'm teaching and conducting, playing, doing talks, all this stuff, so that it's a lot of outflow, you know, of energy, a lot of outflow of energy. So for me to be quiet and then receive so that I can give, things that really helped me do that is, I mean, one of the things that I just, and even to this day, that just really rejuvenates me is to just go downstairs in my basement, pick up my horn, and just play. Just play. Just whatever, you know. Sometimes you're working on music, you know, you're working on, okay, we got this concert coming up, I got to learn this piece, oh, I got this solo, got to do that, oh, brass quintet's going to be in Chicago next week, got to make sure I'm, you know. But to just, like, not have any of that, just come down and just me and the instrument, just connecting with the instrument, to get to that point where it's not me and the instrument, it's just one, you know, like, when I think it just comes out the horn. That's so rewarding to me. And then what actually helps me with that, being in the present moment, is yoga. Yoga really helps to quiet me, to calm me down, to center me, to keep me strong mentally and physically, spiritually. And kind of the combination between those two are the things that really help me to find that thing within that I can then go and give.
Thank you for giving to us today.
Thank you.
Herb Smith is with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, the Gateways Brass Collective, and this is the Musicians of Rochester podcast. It's been a pleasure. If you'd like some more information about Herb and your Rochester Philharmonic, you can go to rpo.org. I'm Julia Figueres. This podcast is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.